Okay, paper 9, section 3. It's old single column, page 101. All right, so just remember that we start out with a little bit of physics here. there's a remember how we mentioned that if you want to think, you know, very precisely about the impersonal expression of the third source and center, you could use the name the Infinite Spirit, or this name, the Universal Manipulator. In particular, if you wanted to really specify that, you know, that you want to talk about just the physical engagement, you know, you would use that Universal Manipulator name. But usually, in general, for the impersonal, we just lump it all together. Call that face of the third source and center the Infinite Spirit, but they wanted to give us a little touch upon the issue of physics, an issue that doesn't get treated very extensively until you get up into part 2. Papers 41 and 42, but there is, you know, certainly the very big picture physics coming up here shortly, as soon as we're done with existential deity, once we get to papers 11 through 15. So it's appropriate that they sort of create a specific section just to kind of set the stage a little bit for what they're going to talk about in the third set of 5 papers, you know, 11 through 15. Okay.
Okay, paper 9, section 3, the Universal Manipulator. The Isle of Paradise is the source and substance of physical gravity, and that should be sufficient to inform you that gravity is one of the most real and eternally dependable things in the whole physical universe of universes. Gravity cannot be modified or annulled except by the forces and energies conjointly sponsored by the Father and the Son, which have been entrusted to and are functionally associated with the person of the third source and center.
Just one little thing, since they made a point of italicizing the word real, there, it's not a point we're going to be really delving into specifically here, but never forget, when you're talking about the Isle of Paradise, you know, there's an immediate tendency to just think of it as a, you know, really fancy platter of dirt that, you know, gods stand on and other beings that get to go visit God. It's not just an actuality. It's also a reality. You know, it has energy pattern imposed upon that actuality. It's purposed. It's not spirit pattern. It's not personality. And it's, you know, but it is energy pattern, or just pattern. It is a reality, and it's an extremely high reality, to the point where, when you really sort of push the case, you know, like they say, the difference between what any sub-absolute being can discern in terms of trying to assess the matter of the isle or the substance of the eternal sun's form, they know that they're different. One's absolute spirit and one's the absolute of matter, but it's a difference in name only. Both of them are so high that they blend together in the distance above the vision of, you know, any sub-absolute being. So when you're talking about purposing something, an expression of individuality that's as high as the substance of the isle, it's going to have it's going to come off as quasi-living in character. It's going to be such a a subtle high purposing. So you always have that in play. When you see, the word pattern attached to the aisle, remember that's what it's attached to. It's attached to real. It's reminding you it's a reality. It's purposed. It's a very complex fact. In terms of its potential for engaging reality. All right. So just starting with that, and then that last little bit, they're leading into these next two paragraphs, which we'll take one at a time, are the ones where they're really giving us a significant dose of a little bit of teasing about physics, and we'll spend a little time talking about them, and then it's a little bit more open reading, but see that last little bit here in this first paragraph is setting the stage here. This whole point that gravity cannot be modified or annulled except by this by what happens when you give rise to the third source and center, and as we've been talking about quite a bit, many aspects of the third source and center are very high facts, we'll see that here in a second.
The infinite spirit possesses a unique and amazing power, anti-gravity. This power is not functionally, observably present in either the Father or the Son. This ability to withstand the pull of material gravity inherent in the third source is revealed in the personal reactions of the conjoint actor to certain phases of universe relationships. And this unique attribute is transmissible to certain of the higher personalities of the infinite spirit.
Okay. First thing, notice that they're reminding you of that particular name. Even though we're in a section entitled The Universal Manipulator, the very beginning and the very end of this paragraph begins and ends in the infinite spirit. Do not take that word lightly. That has significant consequences. Just to go out of the context of this section just a little bit, they'll get to it specifically in the next paper. But this whole bit about, in this case, physical anti-gravity, it's not just the absolute of matter that's in play. Okay, so first of all, just on that point, think about what they're saying. They're saying, okay, you have the Isle of Paradise, which is the absolute of matter. If something is going to have the ability to transcend that, it has to be super absolute. It has to be trans absolute. Well, the very fact that that you know that they use that adjective infinite, you know the potential is there. And so not only does the fact of the third source and center have an aspect that can transcend the absoluteness of the aisle, that particular absolute anchor point, but there's also the personality circuit of the Father as the Father absolute, and the spirit circuit of the Son as the absolute spirit. Those are both absolute facts that are in play. When they talk about those, they talk about gravity. They talk about physical gravity or material gravity. They talk about mindal gravity. They talk about spiritual gravity. They talk about personality gravity. The third source and center not only has the ability to transcend physical or material gravity, but also personality gravity and spirit gravity.
infinite spirit and third source and center are the same?
The third source and center is a very general term, you know, that's really pointing to the fact that it's one of these prime existential facts of both an anchor point, a center, and a source, you know, to manifest from. When you're talking, like I said at the beginning, and you're talking about that third source and center in terms of its impersonal expression, that's the infinite spirit. The personal expression is a conjoint actor. Okay, so, you know, here, you know, see, it's the infinite spirit. Okay, but just think about that for a minute. They're telling you here point blank that it can transcend the absolute of matter. I'm telling you, they'll tell you in the next paper, it can transcend the absolute of spirit. The absolute spirit, you know, the eternal sun and his spirit gravity and circuit man. It's like, that doesn't seem too hard to just take for a given. I mean, the eternal sun is the absolute spirit. This is the infinite spirit. Okay, so that seems reasonable that, you know, the infinite is higher than the absolute. Okay, so, you know, without sort of having any more detailed understanding of what's going on, that seems to make some immediate sense. Okay, just in terms of the names that they've given to things. But, wow, to think about, okay, so you have the Father's personality circuit as the Father Absolute. And that personality gravity, the third source and center can also transcend that. Well, now, wait a minute. Now that I think about it, what have we been talking about a lot here about, you know, one of the main reasons why we use the name the infinite spirit, because so much of understanding the actual functioning of the third source and center is not as that point personality presence at the center of the upper surface of the Isle of Paradise, that existential fact. An awful lot of understanding what's going on, you know, is the infinite mother spirit. Okay, and what do we, you know, remind ourselves all the time? This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, the mother. Now, no matter what level we might be talking at, but the mother. Okay? Now, when that whole bit about being connected through the individuality of the whole, when you're talking about that actual linkage through the mother, that's a personality linkage. I mean, energy, you know, has all sorts of connectivity. And that, but what you're talking about there is this personality linkage. In particular, so you're talking about the Father Absolute and his bestowal of personality and his personality circuit. We know that each person in this room was given an absolutely unique personality. Absolutely unique. That's a technical word. You know? So Chris and Margot were given separate gifts by the Father that makes them absolutely separate from each other. No relationship at all to each other. No relativity. They're absolutely unique, not relatively unique. Okay, so the Father makes you two island universes. But you know that the Father is initiating something. He wants a universe where personalities are going to interact and lead to super additive consequences and whatnot. It's like, well, but he made them absolutely separate. How are they going to interact? You know, and that's the whole why we keep bringing this up. The mother can relate to them in common. Whereas the father can only relate to them individually, the mother can relate to them in common. And so through the mother, the two can be connected. Well, now think about technically what that means. What has the mother just done? She's transcended the absolute separation between those two personalities. She transcends the personality gravity of the father. Okay, so not surprisingly, what is all of this about? This whole ability to transcend, this is mother. This is a mother phenomenon, and it's the mother at the highest level. Trans-absolute mother. And demonstrating that fact, because it's transcending these gravity circuits.
Yeah. Well, something of the way I see it is that the infinite spirit is primarily concerned with the seven super universes.
And no, not that. That's the seven master spirits.
The prerogatives the infinite spirit has are different and more all-inclusive, because that seems to me her domain.
Right. It's very important to remember, though, it doesn't take the infinite spirit to handle the tiny little seven super universes. You know, it doesn't take the infinite spirit to handle the grand universe. It doesn't take the infinite spirit to handle the master universe. I mean, what do you need an infinite fact to handle a finite fact for? The infinite fact of the infinite spirit is obviously meant for something infinite. It's a mother that can handle the cosmos infinite, what goes beyond the master universe. Seven master spirits can handle the seven super universes and their connectivity to the central universe. You need a supreme spirit for the grand universe. You need the ultimate spirit for the master universe. Yeah. What do you need an infinite spirit for?
The infinite spirit must have something eventually to do with the outer space level.
Right, but even beyond that is the point. Right. But see, the whole point is just to remind yourself that there's obviously potential, and they're gonna point that out up here a little ways. There's obviously potential that goes way beyond the master universe. It goes way beyond the absonite, all seven levels of the absonite. It goes way beyond the ultimate, all four levels of the ultimate. It goes even beyond the absolute. Because if it didn't, okay, you wouldn't have this attribute. Now, so the very fact that you have this ability to transcend those three circuits, the personality gravity, the spirit gravity, and the material gravity, absolute facts, is a reminder of how transcendent a phenomenon the third source and center is. What happens when you bring it all together? You know, and you're kind of expecting just another absolute fact, but instead you get something that sort of comes all the way back around and retouches at the highest levels again, where it all started. You know, it was back up there impinging upon these infinite facts. Okay, meanwhile, back to the thing at hand. They're not going to talk about the personality gravity or the spirit gravity right now. The point, you know, here in this section is the material gravity. But I just wanted to remind you that if you think about the greater picture, you know, it's sort of just inexorably, especially when you try to understand, well, what on earth is going on with the overruling of the personality circuit? Just leads you inexorably to the recognition, oh, that's what's behind this. This is that mother fact. It's obviously not just because the third source and center is the absolute mind or something like that. And you'll see they mention that here in the next paragraph. You know, let me just point that out. It's not that because it's the absolute mind that, you know, if I think about this cup and some sort of gravity influence that I might be contemplating about it, that I'm going to overrule that because I'm minded. You know, like if I just think in simple linear gravity terms, I'm overruling gravity right now. My mind is saying I'm not, you know, that cup is not going to just do what a cup wants to do if you let go of it. I'm going to hold it up and resist gravity. That's mind over matter. Okay, it's not that. We're not talking about something as simple as mind over matter. When we're talking about anti-gravity, we're talking about something very profound and very high.
Because gravity is very profound and high.
Right. Yeah. And first of all, we're not even going to be talking about material that sort of linear gravity. We're talking about absolute gravity. Okay, so now let's get this next little one, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the details.
Anti-gravity can annul gravity within a local frame. It does so by the exercise of equal force presence. It operates only with reference to material gravity, and it is not the action of mind. The gravity-resistant phenomenon of a gyroscope is a fair illustration of the effect of anti-gravity, but of no value to illustrate the cause of anti-gravity.
Okay, so it's a simple little paragraph in terms of the number of words. Okay, but let's just get a little sense, you know, and remember, the point is to, you know, you're not trying to, you know, become a physicist here. You're just trying to get a better sense of what kind of a fact you're dealing with when you're talking about the third source and center. Okay, you have a question up front before we...
When I raise the little finger, it means annul means to make void or to make legally void.
Well, and of course, it's not legally, you know.
Right.
But, right. So, you know, it can transcend, it can overrule that phenomenon to some degree, apparently.
I'll say something before you start.
Okay.
This is the same type of power. You know, so that's why it doesn't, it's not pulled from it because it's equal.
I mean, you got the basic idea, but just remember that the key thing that we're trying to get at here is let go of what you immediately think of when you think of material gravity, or you think of, you know, you being held to the earth, you know, or your cheeks being drugged down as you age, or... You know, or your mind being, you know, drugged down because it's material mind being drugged down into the, you know, bowels of, you know, of your mindal domain and being, you know, very low-minded. You know, set that all aside. What we're talking about is absolute gravity. What we're talking about, and let's not really try to run with this statement about equal force presence right here. Let's just take a little bit more general philosophical sense of what they're getting at when they make that statement about how it's engaging it in this, you know, if you want to think about the evolution of energy, in this pre-energy way, this force way. Okay, fundamentally, when you're talking about absolute gravity, what you're talking about is the aisle imposes its influence on finite reality as this absolute of individuality. What that looks like is a centering influence. At every point in finite space, the fact that the aisle is touching that point from outside, what that means is that every point in finite space is potentially a center point for a phenomenon, like the center of a particle, or the center of a sun, or the point about which you would rotate something.
Would that be that you could, when you said phenomenon, could somebody from that, all that, all of paradise touching everything. So that could be how, like, miracles could happen and mm-hmm. stuff, and people would get healed immediately or something because of that touching of the Isle of Paradise and the Father.
Right, we've talked about that there's a lot of deity phenomena that can engage via that material path. So they sort of engage you from the bottom up, rather than the top down. So yes, but this whole issue about that can have a centered phenomenon. If you didn't have the influence of the aisle in the finite, everything would be spread uniformly everywhere. Nothing could ever collect into a centered point. Nothing could ever turn a corner. Nothing, I mean, it couldn't be anything but this homogeneous isotropic, in other words, the same in every direction, the same in every place, fact.
The aisle gives shape to the universe.
The aisle allows pattern to form because it allows there to be a point about which something can be. Anything you can think of. You know, anything can be, large, small, whatever. It allows, it's a centering phenomenon. Okay, so now, so what we're talking about, when we're talking about anti-absolute gravity, we're talking about a presence that's going to annul some measure of that centering influence. Now, in terms of thinking about the electronic level, the level that we of physics that we understand, where there's matter that we can touch, you know, from the littlest things like electrons and protons and stuff like that, all the way up to, you know, couches, the whole ball of wax, the whole electronic level, and even beyond couches. But just, you know, I mean, my point is all the way up to atoms, you know, okay. You know, when we think about that electronic level, physics has been contemplating this for a long time, and they basically say, well, you know, there's a sort of a fundamental thing that we observe. We observe that there's little things, little masses. And for instance, mass has this material gravity phenomenon that's around its central point. The amount of mass that something has, the mass of the Earth, or the mass of the Sun, or the mass of this couch, is indicating how much of that centering presence, that centering influence of the aisle is present, at least in terms of the phenomenon of linear gravity that we're able to study it with. Because, you know, if I have a star sitting there, I can take any other, you know, littler piece of matter, put it anywhere around it, and what does that little piece of matter do? Goes right in towards the center of that star. There's a centering influence there. You know, everything goes towards that, you know, and because of that, the star is spherical. Forget about the rotation of the star for the moment. You know, just imagine it was, you know, it wasn't rotating. It'd be this perfect sphere. A perfect centering influence at the center of that whole phenomenon. Okay, so this whole bit about anti-gravity can annul gravity within a local frame. I mean, if you go up to paper 41, section 4. It's on page 459. I'm just going to read a tiny little thing. So you can just, you know, but that's where I'm going. The very first sentence of section 4 in paper 41 says, the mass of your sun is slightly greater than the estimate of your physicists. We don't need to do on the rest of it, just that part. The mass of your sun is slightly greater than the estimate of your physicists. Okay, now, you might think, well, it's probably just because our physicists are kind of clueless. Well, no, we're talking about send a satellite clear out to Saturn or something, you know, and thread a needle with the thing out there. Okay? I mean, we know the gravity influence of the sun, the apparent centering influence associated with the sun, very, very precisely. Okay, so that's, you know, when you see that, if you know anything about physics, you're going, okay, they're not just telling me that, you know, if we had better measuring devices, we'd get 3 more decimal places or something. No, they're saying that there's, it's not as it appears. It's like, well, it's not as it appears. It's just a mass. Well, what's there to hide it? Nothing can annul mass. Nothing can annul a centering influence. No, I mean, way back when this solar system was forming, there came a point when a particular type of master physical controller came to our solar system to begin to set up shop for an inhabited world. They come and they establish a presence. The particular master physical controller are the mechanical controllers. This whole bit about, and this unique attribute is transmissible to certain of the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. One of those mechanical controllers, that type of master physical controller, their presence negates some of the centering influence of the aisle. So with all the mass within their presence will have less of a centering influence manifestation. In other words, when all is said and done with, finally getting to linear gravity that we can measure, in other words, how much mass the thing seems to have, it's going to appear, in terms of every measurement that you do, to have a certain amount of mass, but that isn't going to be less than what it actually is. The mass of the sun is actually greater than it appears, because part of the centering influence that would be manifested by that amount of mass is negated by the presence of the mechanical controllers in our solar system. That cocoon of their presence is what's called Mon Masha, the mother place of man. This little womb-like place, to the point where they literally use that, coined that name for it, the mother place of man. Mon Masha, when you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold, I mean, who's down at the foundation of the mothers and the wombs that they establish? The mechanical controllers, the mechanical mind controllers. They're the ones also that are doling out mechanical mind in that presence. But they're extreme anti-gravity beings, and so that presence, is actually, like they're saying, annulling gravity within a local frame. What local frame? Their local frame, within the presence of their body, of their form, all gravitational phenomena will seem less than they, or will manifest less than they would if they weren't there.
That means their form has to be awfully darn big.
Right, they're a presence. I mean, how big is the form of the creative mother spirit? The size of all of Nebadon. Okay, this is not an issue. Okay, this is tiny. Okay, how big is the form of the infinite mother spirit? Infinite. Okay, that's a really big form. Okay, making something that's the size of a part of a solar system, okay, that's child's play. Okay, but in terms of the it may be small in terms of the size of the local frame we're talking about here, but in terms of what those beings are doing, it's very profound. They're literally overruling a measure of the influence of the aisle within this domain.
I just hadn't thought of mechanical controllers as higher personalities.
They're not personalities.
So it's not transmissible. This unique attribute is not transmissible.
Well, I mean, it comes down through, and finally ends up, that's the implementation end. Where did master, you've got to get down through the master spirits and, the supreme power directors and the supreme power centers and finally get down to master, I mean, it's coming down through a personality chain to a final, presence that, you can see is a lot like what you had before you had the creative mother spirit. You didn't really have a personal presence. You had an impersonal presence of the creative spirit. Only in this case, it's that fact, only it's not personalizable.
So when they're saying transmissible, that's something different than sort of like downsteppable.
Yeah, I mean, it transmissible through these higher personalities, but in terms of who they finally turn it over to, it's not about possessible. No, this is about transmissible. Okay. And if you go and read, in paper 29 about the master physical controllers, read about the mechanical controllers. They say, okay, these beings have a lot. They have a lot of this anti-gravity presence. So that's the simple example that we know of from the revelation of specifically what they're talking about here. And the sentence C up there in paper 41 that's reminding you of that. That, there's more mass in the sun than we think there is. And no measurement is going to, deduce that.
That's why they tell us in the book.
Right. It's impossible for us to know that. So it can be revealed to us.
Okay.
Okay. And in that sentence, they didn't say because of the presence of the mechanical controllers, but put the pieces together. Okay, I mean they tell you exactly what's going on here. Okay, yeah. So see right up here in front here in paper 9, see they're giving you that first piece of that puzzle. That's the gist of what's going on. You don't need to go into any more detailed physics than that. Just think of, sometimes they'll call absolute gravity circular gravity instead of linear gravity. Okay? Simply because most fundamentally what you can understand that it is it's a centering influence. There wants to be circles about it. Okay? Or spheres.
So this anti-gravity influence wouldn't necessarily be absolutely constant. It could be somewhat variable.
It could be variable.
And it could maybe...
And it's got a boundary.
And it could perhaps control how far the Earth is from the sun.
Right.
Keep it within a bound.
Sure, you've got all this ability to regulate it. Okay, and that's just child's play because remember what these power beings are doing on the grand scale. I mean, you've got the massive Milky Way galaxy. And then this tiny little portion of it, 1/100,000th of it, is the local universe of Nebadon, which, of course, in absolute terms, is still really, really big, okay? But relative to the Milky Way, it's small, okay? So you've got this local universe, this little region of the Milky Way, and the Milky Way is this disk that's, that's rotating like this, and it's not rotating like a record platter. It's rotating differentially, or depending on how far you are away, you're going at different speeds. And I've pointed this out a lot of times. I mean, if you take a glass of chocolate milk and you put take an eyedropper and put a little dropper of chocolate on the surface of that milk, and you already had a spoon in there, and you carefully start stirring that really slow so you don't get all choppy. And watch that little droplet of chocolate. That droplet of chocolate will not go around in the center of the glass like that. You make it go around, say, three times, and that thing is strung into a long noodle that's wrapped all around the whole surface of the milk. If Nebadon, the collection of stars and whatnot that is Nebadon, if that wasn't held together by these beings who can rule gravity, it doesn't, in terms of the scales of trillions and trillions of years, the local universe of Nebadon has gone around the center of the Milky Way countless times. If it wasn't held together, the stars of Nebadon would be spread uniformly over the entire disk, okay? And so would every other local universe, okay? But they don't. It stays completely integrous, goes around because it's held that way. Beings who can wield vast, they're doing it to the whole Milky Way galaxy. Okay, they have vast amount of ability to do what we're talking about here, wield gravity to their ends. They are working to master the physical domain, because you have to. It has to be perfectly harmonized with the personal domain in order for it to be a power personality synthesis that can be supremacy in the end. Okay, so, all right. So that's the basic of what they're doing. They, you know, the basic way they're doing it is not really sort of pushing and pulling on the linear gravity. They're just varying how much centering influence, how much absolute gravity is manifested in the first place. So they control the linear gravity indirectly. They control the absolute gravity directly. Okay, now, so this gravity-resistant phenomenon, so the gravity-resistant phenomenon of a gyroscope is a fair illustration of the effect of anti-gravity, but of no value to illustrate the cause of anti-gravity. Well, we just were talking about the cause, okay? It's this very profound, you know, fact that you have the, you know, the infinite mother spirit, you know, who's trans-absolute and, you know, and this centering, okay. Obviously, gyroscopes aren't, you know, doing that. Okay, but what are they saying about the effect? You know, what are they referring to? Okay, so if I have a gyroscope, and my index finger on my left hand here is the axle of that gyroscope, so I have a gyroscope spinning about that axle, you know, really fast. You know, and if here's a little stand, you know, that axle, that flywheel, that gyroscope is inside of a frame. You know, you've all seen little like toy gyroscopes you can get as a kid. That frame, you know, if you spin that gyroscope up really fast and lay the end of that frame, that little point end on that frame, on a little support sticking up like my index finger on my right hand here, and let go of the gyroscope, does it go clunk? No, what does it do? It stays there. Stays horizontal. But it doesn't stay there stationary. It precesses. Yeah. That axle sweeps out a plane, a horizontal plane. Okay, perpendicular to my stand here. Okay. So see, there's this gravity resistance. The gyroscope, the effect of it is it's resisting, you know, that tendency to just fall down like that because of gravity. It's resisting that.
Stop the spin, it'll flop.
Right, you know, yeah. If it's not spinning, it'll flop. Now, a gyroscope is a little more complex fact of something that's a little bit easier to understand. Instead of thinking about rotation, let's just think about translation, you know, where you have an object and you can move it, you know, in X, Y, and Z. You're going to translate that point. Okay, so here's the Earth, and I'm a little satellite that's going to go, and I want to orbit the Earth. All right, let's say I have this notion, what if you could make an object go around the Earth and it'd stay up there? It's like, well, no, you can't do that. I mean, the Earth is a massive gravitational thing. You put a little blob of metal out there and, you know, in low Earth orbit, it's just going to go clunk. It's going to fall to the Earth. Okay, but it doesn't. Why? Because you don't just put it there stationary and let it fall. It's in motion, like this. So what does it do? You put it there and you let go of it, and it falls a little bit, but at the same time, it goes forward a little bit. And it falls a little bit and goes forward a little bit and falls a little bit and forward a little bit and falls a little bit and goes forward a little bit and it goes around. Okay. Okay. You have a gravity-resistant phenomenon. That satellite seems to be resisting gravity. It's not just falling to the Earth. How is it doing it? Because there's another translation besides it would want to do, and just to have a radial translation. There's this tangential translation. And you combine the two, and it goes in an orbit around the Earth. Okay, but it's you know, at the same time it's going tangential to the orbit, it's going perpendicular, it's going radially. You know, so it's always falling. That's, you know, it's in free fall. That's why, you know, if you go to the space station, you know, there's no gravity because you're in free fall. Okay? But you're not just in free fall, you're also going sideways, and so you go around. Okay. Well, so that, I mean, that's a simple translation picture where you're demonstrating this process of being gravity resistant. The gyroscope is just a rotational analog of that translational phenomenon. It's not just sitting there like that resisting gravity, you know, like the satellite just sitting there resisting gravity. Satellite's going around. The gyroscope is processing. Instead of falling, it's going around in the same way that the, you know, in an analogous way, I should say the same way, in an analogous way to the way the satellite goes around. The slight difference, again, we don't get too deep into physics here, but the difference, the reason the gyroscope seems a little bit more profound is because the fact of what's going on with the gyroscope is a little bit more transcendent. It is embracing a little bit more of the fundamental ability of finite things to express a transcendence of the mere finite. There's a little bit more relationship to this specific centering fact of the aisle, a centering fact that things could go around. I mean, it's fundamentally a rotating thing, as opposed to just a translating thing. It's fundamentally a thing that's going around. So it fundamentally embodies more of this relationship to that absolute gravity, that centering fact. It's a little bit more of a transcendent phenomenon. And so that's, without going into the details, that's why it seems a little bit more mysterious, you know, what it does, you know. And that's why people are endlessly fascinated by gyroscopes. Okay? You know, but they don't sit there, you know, practically worshiping a satellite orbiting the Earth because it seems so mysterious. Okay? You know, they'll devote a whole website to kind of being a worship site for gyroscopes. Okay, because they're picking up that sense. They know, you know, they can't think through it because they don't know about the absolute. They don't know about the absolute. They don't know about all these things. They can tell there's something, you know, kind of mysterious going on there.
Is there an ideal distance from the Earth to put these satellites?
No. I mean, you know, depends what you want to do. You know, I mean, in terms of an ideal distance, well, there's geosynchronous orbit. If you want the satellite to stay over the same spot as the Earth rotates, you got to go out at a certain distance so that it's keeping pace with the Earth. But, you know, that's how communication satellites are set up, so that, you know, you can always know where they are. You aren't having to chase them across the sky. But anyway, so the reason they brought up the gyroscope instead of an orbiting object, you know, is that not only does the gyroscope do kind of what the orbiting object does and resist gravity and, you know, not just fall, but it also is doing it in this little bit more related to the transcendent way. Like we said, the actual cause of this anti-gravity we're talking about here is very transcendent. It's even transcendent of the absolute. It's one thing for the absolute to be quite transcendent of the finite. It's even more so for something to be transcendent of the absolute and be overruling that absolute gravity. Okay, so.
And it's really local. So you can just sit there.
And the amazing thing, see that, and that, you know, think about, so, you know, when they say this unique attribute, and, you know, and they use things like, let's see, back here in the previous one, didn't we have some sort of a statement about how they had this very amazing property or something like that they said. I can't remember exactly what words they used. I mean, think about it, that you can have something that transcends the absolute and is localized.
Unique and amazing power.
You know, wow. I mean, that like seems to be at cross purposes. That almost seems like a mystery of mysteries. I've got something, you know, like the absolute fragment in terms of its quality anyway of the thought adjuster. You know, it should have nothing to do with me. It should be absolutely transcendent to me, but somehow it's actually indwelling my mind. Here I've got something that's even more transcendent than absoluteness, and it's just localized, you know, in a particular application to basically our solar system, you know, or some other solar system or whatever the heck they're doing. Okay, so you have this, you know, and that kind of ties into what you brought up, Ben. I mean, to kind of bring it full circle. You know, again, the only way that it's possible for these mysteries of mysteries like this to be is if there's some other way of getting from point A to point B. You know, because in terms of the line between A and B, this is completely transcendent, and they'd have no connection this way, period, end of story. And yet they are touching each other. How are they doing it? They go the other way around. Instead of going the only apparent way, they go the way that's not apparent. They come through the back door. Okay? And they go the other way around the infinite eternal ellipse and get to these things. Okay? That's what's going on there. So, it's one thing to, you know, to be thinking about physics, and you can have all kinds of fun here, obviously, taking off on this. But in terms of the context here, it's, again, just a reminder, I was trying to stress here the last couple of weeks, you really are not understanding the nature of even the seven absolutes of infinity. If you have some simple notion of, well, there's the absolute of absolutes, there's the Father, and you know, and then everything else is below that in some way. I mean, again, it's just a reminder of how limited an initial assumption the seven merely absolutes of infinity, where you're really kind of only thinking of the third source and center as the absolute mind. Yeah, it's the absolute mind, and in that sense, it's below the absoluteness of the Father, and you kind of have one, two, three, and this, okay. But there's a lot more to the picture than that. And you can't really begin to properly put those other aspects into some sort of a logical arrangement until you let go of the simple assumption that it's all predicated on the seven absolutes of infinity viewpoint, you know, or, you know, to look at it in the infinite eternal ellipse, to think that I can ignore everything on this chart except the outer circle, the individuality circuit here. Not only ignore everything else except the outer circuit, but, you know, take the Father and, put him in this block on the outer circuit. So you take all this stuff and you say, forget about all that, and let's just, you know, push the supreme creators and supreme controllers out of the way and stick the Father in there, and that's it. We've got these seven absolutes. It's a very circumscribed initial assumption. It can get you some things, but you're ignoring a lot to do that. All right, this didn't, you know, hasn't become apparent. We talked all about the Father, we talked all about the Eternal Son, and it wasn't really apparent until now. It's now that we get to the third source and center that we go, wait a minute, there's something not quite right with this notion that I can just think of this as this hierarchy of absolutes. I mean, if they're nothing but absolutes, why are you even using the adjective infinite? I mean, you're not telling me something, obviously. a pretty new reader, if they were really thinking, they could be suspicious by this point that maybe they were being kind of very circumscribed in the initial stuff they were feeding me there at the beginning. Maybe there's a lot more to this picture, you know, and you don't really kind of know what to do with that a possible observation until you get clear up there into deity and reality. You know, and all of a sudden you're going, wait a minute, now I see the word infinite all over the place, and what, you know, what is all this stuff? I'm having a hard time even finding the seven absolutes infinity. There's page after page, and it's like, where in that? Okay, you know. Yeah. But, you know, you should have been suspicious of that clear up here with the third source and center, that it's, you know, and like I said, I mean, you not only have you call it the infinite spirit, you call it the infinite mind, which is even a higher fact. Okay. All right, so enough of kind of just that basic sort of physics stuff. Now let's see what else they have to tell us here.
Still further, does the conjoint actor display powers which can transcend force and neutralize energy. Such powers to operate by slowing down energy to the point of materialization and by other techniques unknown to you.
Okay, the whole bit about neutralizing energy and the slowing down, I mean, for those who have read, you know, it's kind of relating to the physics stuff. Let's not go off on that too much. Let's just touch on one little thing there. There's a, you know, little tidbit they've thrown in there. Transcend force. You notice that initial way they were trying to give you some way to maybe think about it was equal force presence. Well, now, wait a minute. What about transcend force? You know, if you're a power being like a master physical controller and you're doing all these fancy things with automatons or other materializations, other individuations of physical energy, the force charge of space is just a given. You can't do anything about that. It just is. You know, if you're one of those power beings, you know, even a supreme power director, the force charge is just the backdrop upon which you're working. You know, you have to just take it for what it is. But there's some beings that have been revealed to us that don't just have to take the force charge of space for what it is. They can say, you know, I don't quite like it like that. I think I'd like to do something to that. Well, if you're going to do something that, you've got to be transcendent of that force. Okay? It's transcendent force. The master force organizers, you know, they don't just have to, you know, deal with force, whatever the heck it is. They organize it. They transcend force. Okay, so that's what that's getting at.
It started out as unpervaded space. And then force organizers do something to make the space
pervaded. Yeah. Yeah. And then they do that. Yeah.
The energy to evolve force.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But you know, we're not talking about all those details right now. It's just that one little issue of taking it from the force charge to puissant energy and then to, you know, and then to automatons. That ability to grab a hold of force and do something with it, rather than just say, well, okay, that it is just what it is. I'm gonna do things with automatons, you know, and I have to just, you know, work with the force charge as I find it. Yeah, that's not what the force organizers are doing. They take a hold of that force. They have hands to grab that. In other words, they are above that, not below that. Okay, so that's what that's alluding to, just in passing there. You know, and it's very mysterious exactly how you understand the exact origin and nature of the force organizers. They're very limited in that revelation of such things. But okay. But, you know, you can see right here, it still further does the conjoint actor display powers. You know this all has to get back to the third source and center somehow.
Now, it doesn't say they directly oppose force or change the force. It says they operate by slowing down
energy. No, that's a separate issue. We're setting that aside. Once you have an automaton, you've got a phenomenon that moves at the speed of light, okay? Not very handy for making couches out of. You need to slow that thing down. So you bottle up all that motion into a collection of 100 automatons, and then you start doing things with that collection. You've slowed it down to something that stays put and you can build couches out of, okay? That's what the whole power beings are doing, that whole bit with the energy. Once you have energy, once the force organizers have turned force into energy, then they let go and the power beings take over and start doing things, neutralizing energy, slowing down energy to the point of materialization, you know, and whatnot. Okay, that's the power beings doing all that stuff.
All being intentionally done. It just doesn't happen. If it's
right. There are aspects of this that that proceed of their own accord. I mean, like we're talking about gravity. It's not like some being has to move, the cup down when I let go of it. I mean, it just does that. Okay. But in terms of the domains where there are beings, these power beings are all over the energy, taking control of it. No one coincidentally finds a local universe to inhabit that is completely manipulated into that state. Outside of the Milky Way, you might have some stray matter that hasn't been brought into any organization yet that just slowly, collects together into big spherical balls, called dwarf elliptical galaxies and things like this. I mean, that's this unorganized matter that's just, left to its own demise left to its own ends, to be an expression of centering influence, this spherical phenomenon of matter, But, when the power beings take, at some point they're going to say, well, we got this stray stuff. We need to round us all. We got some more local universes to make. Let's round up all this stray crap. And, and let's build a local universe out of it.
Before that, it's a study in what it looks like when it's not being organized.
Yeah.
They're talking about this energy that kind of has a life of its own, and then they're purposely slowing it down.
And by slowing it down...
Why doesn't it slow down by itself?
They should put that in quotes. I mean, they're not trying to explain everything they're saying here. They're just giving little teasers. Okay, by slowing down, what it means is if I have something that's going on a beeline, it's I wouldn't call that slow. I'm chasing after it. It's on this beeline. Well, what if I took that beeline and I wrapped it back on itself? Now I could catch it. I would have slowed it down. That's basically what they're doing. Don't try to think about anything in details. Just think about that basic philosophical notion of that's what they're doing. They're wrapping these motions back upon themselves so that they're closed motions. So that eventually you can have a particle. A particle is this energy phenomenon that appears to just be no motion at all. It appears to be this static fact. Well, it actually is motion, but it's motion that's wrapped back upon itself.
It's self-contained.
And that motion's not slowing down.
Right, and that motion hasn't slowed down.
Yeah.
So this inherent motion is not responsive to friction.
No, you don't have friction until you get all the way to mass and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of thinking of this as like some sort of an analog to like an electrical circuit, it's a superconductor, okay? There's no resistance.
Nova talks about how the sun works, but they're saying it's more like a clock. It winds itself up in the center, and then it goes the opposite direction. And so when you said something like it slows down, well, I don't want to be misinterpreted.
That's all very material, literal, overt stuff. It's a matter if it's the size of the sun. And we're not talking about stuff like that. We're talking about motions of a very fundamental level. But you can, the fact that you know that, for instance, satellites can go in a circle, you know that reality manifests circular motion. That doesn't come from nowhere. There has to be a source of such circular motion phenomena on the macroscopic scale, be it all the complexities of the rotation of the sun, or something as straightforward as a satellite going around the Earth, that circular type motion didn't just suddenly manifest there. It has a source back in the deeper, more fundamental level. And it all boils down to that. One of the fundamental properties of what this is all built out of, ultimatons. And ultimatons have three fundamental properties. They're all three motions. And one of those motions is what you would think of as a rotation. I mean, that circularity is there at the fundamental level. And everything else gets its circularity, you know, from that pattern. It's traceable back to that source. You know, but why is there circularity in the first place? Because there's the centering presence of the aisle. Okay. You know, an automaton is a little spherical presence. Why isn't it shaped like a pencil? Why is it a sphere? Because the Isle of Paradise is not a line presence. It's a point presence. It's a centering influence. Everything forms in a sphere about its pointness.
You didn't answer my first question.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I did. And as I said, I came full circle and I pointed to you. Right? The whole point is that those sorts of phenomena where you see God doing material things, and it seems very magical, and humans would call them a miracle. Okay, it's not magical. There is no literal miracle going on. They have a way of grabbing a hold of the material phenomenon and doing what they want with it. Okay, and they don't do it magically. They don't somehow take their spirit hand and magically have it grab matter, because that's illogical. Spirit passes through matter. But they don't have a spirit hand. Only. They have a matter hand that comes around the other way, and you can't see it. It comes from the inside of the matter. It comes through the aisle. It comes through that centering influence and grabs a hold of the matter from the inside and does what it wants with it. Okay? It's not that you could do the magic in two ways. You could say, well, I think magically spirit can grab matter. No, that's magic thinking. Well, I think that matter is actually spirit. No, that's magic thinking. There is no magic. Matter is matter and spirit is spirit, and they do not touch each other. They pass right through each other. So if spirit touches matter, it's not magically like that. There has to be another way. Okay, the aisle is the way. Okay. Yeah, and we've talked about that before. That's the fundamental way that all these things that are mysteries of mysteries happen.
And the vehicle that it happens through is these very beings we're discussing here of the infinite spirit.
Yeah, for instance. That's
the power. They can manipulate power. They have that ability. It comes
from unless you're a being that also possesses that too.
It's physical meets physical.
Right, it's physical meets physical.
It's not spirit coming down.
Right. I mean, Jesus, after his baptism, could have, he now possesses supreme type deity. He could have decided to manifest his power personality synthesis. He has the ability to very directly engage power, but he said, his six great decisions. No, I'm not going to do that. He has connected those things together. So what was an invisible hand is now a visible hand. He's brought that ability for things to kind of reach from the underneath and grab a hold. Through his seven bestowals, he's brought himself all the way down and connected those together. Like the supreme being is going to be. He's going to be this overt power personality synthesis, not this mystery of mysteries connection between power and personality through the back door. We are moving towards more and more expression of these things being overt. When deity does this, it does it because it also now possesses some of the attributes that those power beings have as well. But a lot of those, like we were pointing out, a lot of those power beings can do what they do only because they're not a personality. If they were a personality, they couldn't do this. See, that's what's so profound about the notion of the supreme being and everything else that's moving towards that sort of a phenomenon. It's a fully a person, and it can do that power stuff. Okay, And back to the point, there's a being on high who is like that. Who might that be? Yeah, the one we're reading about. It's just as much conjoint actor as it is infinite spirit or universal manipulator. It has those two things together as one. All right.
The conjoint creator is not energy, nor the source of energy, nor the destiny of energy. He is the manipulator of energy. The conjoint creator is action, motion, change, modification, coordination, stabilization, and equilibrium. The energies subject to the direct or indirect control of Paradise are by nature responsive to the acts of the third source and center and his manifold agencies.
So action, M dash, and then there was a sequence of words. Of those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words, was there one of those 6 words that caught your eye? Yeah. All right, what was I saying? Yeah, see, this is about the fact that there's a mother aspect to this phenomenon we're talking about.
The universe of universes is permeated by the power control creatures of the third source and center, physical controllers, power directors, power centers, and other representatives of the God of Action who have to do with the regulation and stabilization of physical energies. These unique creatures of physical function all possess varying attributes of power control, such as anti-gravity, which they utilize in their efforts to establish the physical equilibrium of the matter and energies of the grand universe. All these material activities of the God of Action appear to relate his function to the Isle of Paradise, and indeed the agencies of power are all regardful of, even dependent on, the absoluteness of the Eternal Isle. But the conjoint actor does not act for or in response to Paradise. He acts personally for the Father and the Son. Paradise is not a person. The non-personal, impersonal, and otherwise not personal doings of the third source and center are all volitional acts of the conjoint actor himself. They are not reflections, derivatives, or repercussions of anything or anybody.
Derivations. Yeah. But, okay, see, so, I mean, they're just making that point that I was just bringing up. You can get down in the depths of thinking about all this universal manipulator stuff, all this very impersonal energy, physics stuff, and you could lose sight of what I said. There is no separation between what does this very physics-like stuff and what is a very, very definitive personal fact, an infinite person, the conjoint actor. They're one and the same fact. Two faces of one being, as it were. Okay? And they're reminding you that. It's not like the third source and center is the grand mechanical controller on high. It's not some infinite, impersonal presence fact. They were kind of hesitant at this point to bring up all this much physics for fear that you're going to start to just turn the infinite spirit into a big machine in the sky, and they want you to challenge yourself. There is a power personality synthesis here. In the same way that over this long span of the grand universe time, you're slowly going to establish a power personality synthesis, that expresses the total finite, the supreme being. That power personality synthesis happened at the absolute level and even beyond, before time began. Like we've often, when we talk about the basic picture, once you have the first source and center and the second source and center and the paradise source and center, you have these the fundamental parallelism of creator on one side and controller on the other side, spirit and energy, those two come together as a synthesized expression to complete things on the absolute level. Yeah. So the third source and center is a pattern for such synthesis. It's not like the Universal Father, where the separation never occurred, so of course the two are together. You fully separated. You took the two apart an infinite distance, and then you, in part of what you've separated by an infinite distance, you brought back together again. So there's a pattern for synthesizing in the finite, synthesizing in the absolute, synthesizing in the co-absolute. Here it is.
When you said that in every ultratom there's an Isle of Paradise, isn't that what you told me?
So think about it. If what absolute gravity is, what the influence of the Isle is a centering influence. And they tell you that if you could see an ultratom, you would see a tiny little sphere. So ask yourself a simple question. Why did this thing, whatever it is, ball itself up into a sphere? Why didn't it spread out into a disk or something? Why is it a spherical fact? It's as if something is at the center, a centering influence at the center of that automaton that's telling it, you shall obey me, orient yourself equally around me. I am the center of all things. Okay? You shall be a sphere. I command you. Okay? It's a centering influence. That's the presence of the Isle. That's absolute gravity.
Except it's not personal.
Except it's not personal.
It's controlling.
But there is a being who said that and is doing that through the Isle. What's the name of that being? Universal Father. As the universal controller, he speaks through the Isle.
Cool. So if you do want to pray for healing for somebody you know who's sick, for instance, that could actually, that's how it happens, is from that.
Yeah. But again, of course, remember, they only answer prayers spiritually, and you're asking for a material fact. So, you know, it's going to have...
So you're right there, I guess.
Yes. Well, it doesn't mean that there won't, you know, there couldn't be, but remember, they're not going to just heal because, well, there's a broken material thing, so we've got to fix it. That isn't what prayer is about. The universe is filled with broken material things, and they're not getting fixed, okay? They're evolving into being fixed, okay?
But they tell you what to pray for that might result in you having a mind that's over that broken matter.
Whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different ways this could happen indirectly, but always remember fundamentally what prayer is about. Prayer is like, you know, we talked about mercy. Was that last time? I think it was, right? Prayer is about spirit. I mean, who does it go to? Does spirit, if you pray, does that go on the material gravity circuit to the Isle? No, it goes on the spirit gravity circuit to the absolute spirit. It's fundamentally a spirit issue. It's about spirit only. It doesn't go to the third source and center, who is partly about spirit and partly about energy. No, it goes to the thing that has absolutely nothing to do with matter. The eternal sun, that's where the prayer goes. So just remember what they've revealed to us about prayer. Okay, where in the heck were we? Let's see, before we... I just wanted to, just notice again how they're using the words. We were taught, even though we're in this paragraph talking about the universal manipulator, we saw that when they were really talking about the impersonal, they used the name the infinite spirit. And when they were really talking about the personal, like right here, they used the name conjoint actor. Yeah. Those are the two basic terms. Out of all the conjoint creator and on all these other terms, when it all boils down, you can really talk about it pretty succinctly with two labels. Conjoint actor and infinite spirit, personal and impersonal.
I
I thought the conjoint actor was the human being.
No, the conjoint actor is the third source and center.
Well, isn't that the human being?
No. Humans are nowhere to be seen here. We're an infinite distance from humans at this point. Right. This is all about an infinite being called the third source and center. Okay, but if I'm have any, you know, personal interest in that fact, there better be something personal about that, and there is. There's an infinite person there called the conjoint actor. Who's relating to me personally in all kinds of subtle ways that we don't need to go into right now. But all right, so, okay, so let's get this other one here.
Paradise is the pattern of infinity. The God of action is the activator of that pattern. Paradise is the material fulcrum of infinity. The agencies of the third source and center are the levers of intelligence which motivate the material level and inject spontaneity into the mechanism of the physical creation.
Okay, see, so two things they're saying there. One, they're making the section come full circle. What word did they italicize in the first paragraph?
Real.
What word did they just repeat here in this last paragraph? Paradise is the
material
pattern. Real pattern. Okay. So they're reminding you that again. The paradise isn't just, you know, the actuality, you know, or the geographic center, say, of infinity. Like, yeah, that's true. But it's also the pattern of infinity. It's a condensation of infinity into, and purposed, you know. You condense infinity to this singular fact, and it can be purposed.
So pattern is manifestation with purpose.
Pattern is purpose. Okay. But it's also the geographic center of infinity. Paradise is the material fulcrum of infinity. It's this centering influence. Doesn't matter where you go in infinity, every point is a fulcrum point. It's a centering point. I can lever about that, like I could make something rotate about that point. I couldn't rotate things if paradise wasn't at every point. Or if it was only at, you know, 3 points, I'd try to rotate it over here and I couldn't. I'd have to find that, and then I could rotate it. Okay? The only reason you can rotate something is because there's these centering points at every point of space. Okay, it doesn't matter if you think really simplistically like that little teeter-totter. Now, you know, analogy I was just using there, but, you know, they're using the teeter-totter. They're using a fulcrum and levers, okay? So they're just reminding you that all these things that these power beings are doing, they're doing all this fancy stuff with physical stuff, no matter what they do, what they have to, you know, the aisle is. So everything they're doing is levering about that. It's not surprising that when you start to think about physical matter, you end up recognizing that so much of what we call a particle is something that is wrapped back on itself. Someone has leveraged something about a fulcrum and wrap things up. That's what they do.
An analogy with the thought adjusters is that each thought adjuster feels like a center of the universe.
Right. It takes up residence at the center of the temple within.
Right.
And you can begin to leverage yourself about that fulcrum. Begin to wrap your nature about that center point.
Are you a first circle wrap?
Yeah. They all start out as seventh circle wraps.
I'm out there early.
Sixth circle wraps. See, that's why they use that circle thing. It's we've used various analogies like the rod extending down from above, you know, and the circles are wrapped around it. It's a centering influence. You can center your personalized selfhood around that center point. Yeah.
This centering influence of paradise, is that a function of space?
No.
If you transcends no. even space.
I mean, it's a centering influence that's injected into space. You have space,
space.
And, you know, injected into every point in space is the centering influence. Now, just one other thing about, if, since you brought up adjusters, you know, why, I mean, it obviously seemed to work. I could use that little picture I just painted about the centering influence of the adjuster, and it seemed to work, but was I just kind of playing with the thing, you know? No. Can you understand why that's literally the case? I mean, the only way there can be a center anywhere, in anything, is because of the aisle. The aisle is a geographic center of infinity, of everything. If anything is individuated, it's individuated relative to the aisle. When the Father takes the reservoir, the infinite upholder, and dips the ladle into it, you know, we always, you know, makes this individuation that is a thought adjuster. Okay, you have this reservoir that, you know, that's infinite. No individuation there. Okay, and then you individuate out of it. You take a measure of that non-centered fact, and you create a little centered measure of it. Where did it get its centering from? The Father related a measure of that substance, you know, the potential of that reservoir to the aisle. He said, measure, meet, aisle. And little individuation was. Okay? Nothing is individuated except that it's relative to the aisle. Everything, because it's the absolute of individuality. Relative to the eternal Son, do you get individuation? No, that's the absolute of unity. Not the absolute of individuality. And that's why the eternal Son can't fragment. Okay.
Why does the eternal Son have a relationship to the aisle? I mean, it's his residence. He doesn't fill the whole master universe.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways. In order for the Son to get to the aisle, the Son has to be able to touch someone who does have direct contact with the aisle. There's two routes. The Eternal Son can contact the Universal Father, person to person, and the Universal Father is in touch with, you know, his nature as the Universal Controller, and that touches the aisle. So that's one way the Eternal Son could get to the aisle. But there's another way. We just read about it. Remember, we were talking about this whole bit of the universal manipulator. You think about that impersonal aspect of the third source and center, you can think about it as having two hands if you want to be really precise. One hand, the infinite spirit that can grab a hold of the absolute spirit, spirit to spirit, and one hand, the universal manipulator that can grab a hold of the aisle. Well, that's another way that the Eternal Son could get to the aisle, is through the third source and center. See, both the first and the third sources and center have within themselves the ability to directly relate to the aisle, because they have energy nature, not just spirit nature, if you will. Yeah. They have individuality likeness as well as unity likeness in their nature. The Eternal Son has only unity likeness, so he can't get there directly. Only get there indirectly through the one of the other two persons.
The Son kind of uses them as a jar.
Well, is the aisle a machine?
It's not a person. You should say it that way. And you notice they say it that way.
In the forward, they say it's much more of a controller than a reactor.
I mean, you don't want to call it a machine, because that means it has no, it doesn't embody purposing. A machine is just an actuality. The aisle is a reality. So it's not a machine in the sense that you think of a machine.
But good luck building machines without the eye.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't even turn a screwdriver without the eye. You can't rotate a screwdriver without the eye. There'd be no way to rotate it. No, nothing that rotation could be centered about without absolute gravity.
No gyroscopes.
No, nothing. No satellites.
Forget it.
Yeah. You couldn't even walk a curved path. You could walk a straight line. You couldn't walk a curved path. Okay. Let's not try to jump into. But let's just presage a little because we were just talking, complete what we were just talking about there. That particular linkage that we were just reminding ourselves again, you know, how there's a relationship between the eternal sun and the aisle through the impersonal nature of the third source and center. That through that fact, the absolute spirit and the absolute of matter come into relationship. That relationship is made manifest literally as a superadditive consequence, the title of the next section. Relationship between the absolute spirit and the absolute matter is the absolute mind. Again, that superadditive consequence, spirit, energy, superadditive consequence of relations. So even when you're talking about, you know, that aspect which seems to kind of bring the absolute back together again, you know, you separated the energy and the spirit, and then you think of bringing them back together again in mind. But, you know, that's a bit of a distortion in what that picture I just painted. That was all on a plane.
I think of absolutes as having an independent existence. And apparently that's an erroneous thought. They
have some qualified absoluteness. Uh-huh. Absolute mind is the absolute of mind, but just as mind to mind. Spirit is a separate issue. Energy is a separate issue. Personality is a separate issue.
So when you talk about having a spiritual intention in your prayer, influencing mind, and then there's kind of mind over matter.
Well, see, I mean, the whole, that was kind of the point I was making. I mean, the truer the prayer, the more the nucleus of that prayer is about unity, not about individuality and its brokenness. Okay? But, like we were just saying there, you know, the nucleus is spirit, and that's the ticket that it rides to get to the aisle, you know, where the eternal sun is. It rides a spiritual rail to the eternal sun on the Isle of Paradise. But spirit is not an island universe. Spirit doesn't exist divorced from relationship to everything else. The absolute spirit is intimately connected to the absolute mind. And the absolute mind is intimately connected to the absolute of matter. And the absolute of matter is intimately connected to every automaton in my body. So material things can manifest as a result of a true prayer. It's not like it's impossible. But the whole point is, if you try to send it on a material rail to the center of everything, it won't get there. The nucleus of a prayer can't be material. It can't be about individuality. It won't go anywhere. Okay? It has to have a spirit nucleus.
Here's a quote that talks about material prayer. Egotistic prayers involve confessions and petitions and often consist in requests for material favors. So healing would be a egotistical prayer, according to them.
Yeah, heal me.
Not heal me, heal somebody else.
Yeah, I'm right. Right, but I say, right, it's, you know, I mean, again, it's about a self.
See, when Jesus healed, it was because of supremacy involved.
Right. The whole issue is, you know, again, you can be, if you're just concerned about that the individuality of another person, it's still just about a self, egotistic. It's about a self. And it doesn't have to be yourself. It could be about another self. It's still just about that self. The self is an individuality. I mean, if a prayer is going to be effective in any way, you know, and maybe come all the way around to affecting material issues, it has to somehow resonate with issues of unity. There has to be a unity issue in play somehow.
Well, then you could think of the person, like, for instance, it's this little 10-year-old boy that I don't know, but somebody has asked for prayer for him. He's got cancer all over. I'm just wondering if there was enough prayer and there was a unity in this child that he could be used for some good, and it'd be more important for him to stay here, that would invoke the unity.
Yeah, right. Or it might be more important for him not to stay here. Saying you don't know that. You can't know that. We can't know that. But what you said was, see, the truth. There was a spirit rail that you were riding there. I mean, you can focus your prayer on the thought that mother or that child could have a greater connection to unity. May they have spiritual strength, regardless of the material issue. Live or die, may they have spiritual strength. And see, that prayer has some possibility of having an effect, because mercy, you know, can work with that. Okay? That's what mercy's about, like we were saying before. It's about spirit. There is abundant mercy being bestowed. May those two individuals open their minds to that bestowal of the integrity of unity that's coming from above. So that live or die, they can die as children of God, strong in spirit, yet weak in matter, perhaps. You know, and if some greater thing is in play, where the matter issue is really significant, well, fine. God will take care of that. God knows whether or not there's an issue there, that if that person is needed or something like that. You know, I can't know that, and it's completely presumptuous of me to think that, well, my assessment of it, God, is you're obviously clueless. I mean, look at the thing. I mean, you know, it's a poor mother and a child. Can't you see that? I mean, how could you be so cruel as to let her child die? Okay, I mean, you're presuming to see the end from the beginning. It's ridiculous. Okay.
I wasn't saying.
I know, but you are. I mean, I'm just using you in the general sense. You know that humans have been doing that since the dawn of time. The revelation is here to just point what I just did out and say, now think about that. Reflect on that. Does that sound right? What on earth are you thinking? Why do you think you see something that God doesn't? Why do you think you have to call something to God's attention? God, did you notice that a child is sick? Oh my goodness, how did I miss that? Thank you, John. John, why, you know, I gotta employ you, John. I mean, you got great eyes. I mean, if only I was on, you know, all seeing like you. They're trying to get you to just, it's like, step back. It's like, think about these people. You really think that something is missed? the big picture's sight? Of course not. He sees everything, knows everything. Omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent. Okay. But you know, by praying, you're trying to get yourself to really tune into the truth of what's going on. I want to be part of your truth in this circumstance, God. I know where you work. I know what your mercy is. I know your mercy is a spiritual phenomenon, and I want to acknowledge that in my prayer. The abundance of your mercy, the abundance of your spiritual gifts that you've poured lavishly upon us. And I pray that others would know what I know, that we want for nothing. You know?
I have something that comes from Catholicism it's just the poor. It reminded me of what you were talking about. The poor will inherit the earth.
The meek will inherit the earth.
And you were talking about the people being more spiritual. Is that what that refers to?
The poor in spirit, you know, the meek. In other words, the humble. Those who humbly... know that they can't do anything. If they are going to be part of those who inherit the earth, part of an ongoing phenomenon in the universe, they need to let go of the notion that it's all about them. They need to humbly open themselves up to these lavish gifts of spirit that are pouring in, and that can make you strong. You know, those who aren't poor of spirit, you know, that expression, it's, you know, I don't need someone to give me spirit. I've got the spirit. I am the spirit. I am the rock. That's someone who's not poor in spirit. That's not someone who's humble. It's not someone who's meek. That's someone who is setting themselves up for a fall. The poor in spirit is those who know that they are nothing. But they yearn to be something, and they know who can make them something. God can, and they need to humbly open themselves up to that presence of God within, and God will grow them. God will make them strong, and if they allow that, if they allow that growth, if they allow that strength to develop, just maybe God can use them. But if you aren't strong like God is strong, do you really want him to grab a hold of you and wield you? You know, if you're a spaghetti noodle, well cooked, okay, do you want to be attached to a centrifuge? Probably not. You better be Agendonter steel. You better be something, you know, that when God grabs a hold of you and wields you like you say you want him to use you as his hand and his instrument, know what you're asking for. You've got to supply the favorable conditions. You need to be strong. You have to have spiritual strength in order to be wielded by an absolute spiritual being. Okay? Now, until you're absolutely certain that you possess absolute integrity, maybe you should just humbly wait to be grown some more and not, you know, ask to be picked up and wielded.
So does that mean don't have ambitions like society's taught you?
I mean...
Could an example be Einstein?
It could be you. I mean, we're not talking about intellectual prowess. We're not talking about spiritual filigree either. We're talking about spiritual strength. We're talking about, you know, genuine spirit that you can build buildings out of on the
architectural spheres on high. You know, how many floors of your spirit substance do you think we could stack up before it toppled over? Could we build a skyscraper of spirit substance out of you? You know, or are you more like the wet noodle analogy? And maybe you're not ready to be piled up into a spiritual skyscraper yet.
Nice ranch home.
Nice single level, yeah. Right.
That's like I'm not
no roof.
Don't need a roof.
You see my point of the analogy? I mean, you know, it's to think about it very literally. You know, there's a lot of people who might have some particular attribute in you know, in a significant measure, but when the going gets tough, you know, then you figure out whether or not there's any actual spiritual strength here or not. You know, when incredible disease or ailment befalls you, you know, we quickly learn, you know, whether or not, you know, you were just putting on a big fancy show with your robes and whatnot. Okay? If there's any genuine spirit substance there, you know, are you groveling and crumbling or do you stand strong? You know, when the going got tough, were you gnawed and crumbled? Or were you not even Van, were you even Amadon? Okay. You know, how many people, when they get sick, stand strong like Amadon? So that the whole universe takes notice. Wow, would you look at that? I mean, have you ever seen such a diseased-ridden mortal? And yet, doesn't faze him. Stands unmoved. Are you like that? Or are you groveling and begging for Jesus, heal me?
Or are you scheduling a massage?
See? And that's the contrast. Do you have spiritual strength or not? Anyone can claim to have spiritual strength when, you know, when the seas are calm. Right.
You know, it's like when we are faced with the travails of our lives, and you always hear people talk about the samurai sword. It gets beaten and refired and beaten and refired. How do you compare it to that sword? Can you flex without breaking?
Yeah. Right. See, and that's why the beauty of that little coinage of mine, Agendanter steel. Right. Tempered, I mean, you know, so that you have the potential to be an instrument that God can send into a situation that would break the normal ascending mortal. He's going to send you because you won't break. You know, the really tough jobs, that's what await us. You know, right into the heart of the firestorm, that's where we're going to go. Because we're the only ones that can handle it if we choose to actualize this potential, or we can crumble and he'll turn to another.
Not in Jerusalem, evolving mortal failed in the rebellion.
Right. They had, you know, they had developed enough spiritual strength. I mean, and the amazing thing there is, you know that they probably were unfused. Amongst those on Gerasim. It's not just because they fused. I mean, obviously, if you fused again, you're not going to fail. but the very point that they would, the very fact that they would make that point is probably telling you, you know, they were unfused individuals there on Gerasim. But because they had their adjuster and they had, you know, enough consecration, they didn't falter. You know, there were mortals that had made it all the way to Gerasim, were separated from their adjuster, that did falter, nod, etc. Okay, so it isn't just, you know, it's a combination of they have the adjuster, they're close, they have that center point that they can, you know, they can go to the citadel within, and they can put themselves in motion about that. You know, they're not going to fly off on a tangent because they are orbiting about the center of the citadel within, and they will not be broken by all this that's going on. Yeah. Okay, well, that was kind of a fun opportunity to just kind of work on that a little bit more. See, and just to recognize, see, I mean, we just connected automatons to adjusters. Now, a basic truth of both of them is understood with the same fact. That's why, you know, it doesn't matter what part of the book you're studying. You're learning something about yourself if you've discovered the truth of what you're reading there. It will immediately impact you if you've discovered the truth. If you're reading it and it seems to have absolutely no connection to you, that's because you haven't found the truth of it. You need to work on that paragraph some more. Okay? Because there's nothing but the revelation of truth in here. Doesn't matter if you're in one of the papers about the, you know, one of the geologic periods or something. You know, you're reading about the Carboniferous or something. There's truth about you in there. What is it? It's not just about the facts of the Carboniferous age. It's about you somehow. How? You know, don't let go until you figure it out. You know, these paragraphs we were just reading about anti-gravity. We figured out how that was about us. We understood that by understanding the centering influence, and then we immediately noticed, wait a minute, I know about that. I actually think I may have even experienced that ability to keep myself tight about the center within.
But I thought you said that humans weren't supposed to be taken into contact with that.
Not directly.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not directly about.
That's where I got confused.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. See. So you figure out what it's about directly first, and then figure out what its consequences are. Okay. You know, even though we got there only that one section, you can see it kind of actually shifts. It's just that one little kind of physics section, and then they really get into mind. Absolute mind, the ministry of mind, the mind-gravity circuit is mind, you know, the main thing that we can relate to about the third source and center is the absolute of mind. So we'll get to that next time. Let's take a moment.